Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, Episode 8, the dramatic return of the Prodigal Sons. I am one of your trio of hosts, Dally Domofsky. Also joining me is Sean Norton.
Hello.
And Steven Strom.
Truth.
Truth. You know, I just realized looking at our names on the show notes that Dally Domofsky, or Double D, Steven Strom, or Double S, and Sean Norton, or just no double letters.
Nothing.
No, I got nothing.
You could kind of contract it and make it into Snorton, more like Sean Snorton.
No, you could do that. You could be doing. Everybody's been doing that since third grade. So.
He's not boring.
May as well get you guys on that too. Yeah. Snorton, Snorty, all that fun stuff.
Well, gentlemen, welcome.
I'm sorry if I opened up old wounds.
No, it's okay. That's actually for a long time. That's how I was referred to at my job too. My boss, he loves that stuff. So I've had about 15 years to get used to it. So.
Well, at least nobody tries to mispronounce your actual name all the time. Everybody's constantly telling me that that they think my name is Steven Storm instead of Steven Strom. It's spelled with an O. But then when they find out that it's not Steven Storm, they all tell me I should change it to Steven Storm. And, like, only some of them are joking.
Well, Steven Storm is a pretty badass name.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
That's a fantastic it's like something four. Out of...
Something out of Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah, Steven Storm. Yeah, well,
whenever I think of it, I think of Storm Saxon from V for Vendetta. Nice. But
Well, you guys didn't. Either you grew up with a messed up first name like I have, so.
Right.
I think people mispronounce my name so often in like junior high and elementary school and high school that at one point my nickname was Salad Bar because it was easier to pronounce than Dalibor. So Salad Bar Domofsky was my name for about 8 years.
Oh, wow.
I guess I've never asked, do you like Dalibor or Dalibor?
It's actually pronounced Dalibor. You have to roll the R. The
rrr.
The rrr. Say that. Dalibor.
I like that.
Oh, God. Luckily, we're scheduled for a shorter episode because I left a lot of room for
Oh, yeah, that's
tangents.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Well, guys, thanks for coming on back to the episode. Coming back after a nice, I think it was like 2.5 month hiatus, basically because it was my fault that we haven't gotten back together for 2.5 months.
Well, partially it's that there isn't the overriding Doctor Who fever going on because Doctor Who's not really on air right now. So
I always have Doctor Who fever.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I actually.
You're going to make a dance out of it, like.
Yeah. Plus, it took us this long to kind of to re-coordinate what we wanted to do, and then, you know. Life gets in the way with holidays, costumes, and costumed holidays and stuff. So
yeah, I didn't do anything.
My favorite costume holiday, Thanksgiving.
Where you wear a bib and pregnancy pants?
Yeah.
No, it's nice. I was going to go with the turkey joke, but I think you did better.
I went as a pregnant woman. A pregnant baby.
Pregnant baby.
Well, the format of the show for the time being until Doctor Who makes his wonderful return to our television waves is airwaves, I guess, is we're going to focus on
21 days.
21 days, yep, that's true. And we'll get into that. But we'll talk a little bit about the news of what's going on in the Doctor Who universe. So that'll include Doctor Who, Torchwood, Sergei Adventures. Basically, things that kind of touch on Doctor Who. And then we'll kind of get into what we're calling almost like a Doctor Who book club. We'll take a look at kind of classic Doctor Who episodes from, you know, all the way as far back as the 60s. And then we'll even take a look at some of the graphic novels and comics and maybe even look at some of the novels or cartoons or whatever that have popped up over the years. So we will we'll take a look at doing that kind of stuff. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting.
Stay tuned for the Scream of the Shelka episode.
Yeah.
Somebody out there, there's a Doctor Who fan bigger than you guys that is laughing his ass off.
Well, we hope that was a funny joke because I had no idea what that meant. Well, let's get right into some of the news. And the biggest story, of course, is that – would you say, Sean, 21 days?
Yes.
As of this reporting.
So 21 days, the Doctor Who Christmas special.
It'll be less than that by the
Christmas.
Because it falls on Christmas. And unbeknownst to me, for the entire time we've been recording this show, I never knew that the Doctor Who Christmas special actually landed on Christmas. So,
You know, there's like a song that tells you how many days there are until Doctor Who comes out, right? Oh, wait, is that for Christmas? I always thought that song was telling me when Doctor Who was coming.
Look at this guy.
It's beginning to look a lot like Daleks.
Oh, that was so bad.
Let's add it to the list of things to edit out.
Yeah.
And never do again.
So, Sean, tell us a little bit about the Christmas special, because there's been a lot that's been revealed about it. Some of the cast was kind of interesting, but plot lines, I mean, you guys kind of familiar with the plot line?
You know, it's interesting. I really don't, and this is weird because I'm a super fan, but I don't pay a lot of attention to the buzz that builds up before a Christmas special hits the airwaves.
Yeah.
I just, because I know it's such a self-contained episode, I know it's going to be, especially with Moffat, I know it's going to be super Christmassy and everything. But to me, they don't really stay with me after I watch them. I mean, with the exception of the Dave Tennant one, which really was him kind of, like, that was his first shebang, and that was his regeneration and everything.
Sure.
But, you know, you talk about Runaway Bride, or you talk about whatever, the Voyage Titanic. Yeah. So, you know, they're cool and they're fun. They're fun when they hit. But I just kind of I look forward to it in the sense that, like, I'm going to get new Doctor Who on Christmas, but I don't do much beyond that. That being said, I do know that it's going to be a Doctor Who-y spin on The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I think it's called The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
That's super weird to me. Like, does that strike anybody else as odd that they're kind of doing an homage to? I mean, if it was like an homage to like a Bible story or something, like something ubiquitous like that, but it's like it's an homage to a book that was go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I was finished your thought.
Well, it's just it seems a little bit too, I don't know, newish or kind of specific. It seems really specific. It seems like a really specific thing to be basing your entire episode story off of. It seems a little bit weird to me.
Last year they did the Christmas Carol. I mean, wasn't that really?
Yeah, but that's Charles Dickens. And especially a Christmas Carol is so sort of like, I don't know what the word would be. Ubiquitous sounds about right, I guess.
Yeah,
it's so well known and so like broad at this point. It's been adapted by so many other things that it's not weird for that to be adapted yet. But like,
sure.
And that, I mean, and it's also like hundreds of years old by this point. At this point, or at least a couple over 100 years old now. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say in the theme of the story, last year's was it was probably several hundred years after, after the book was written. So
yeah, and. Well,
no, I'm saying in real life.
No, yeah, I. No, but isn't the C.S. Lewis novel really big across the pond? I mean, isn't that a huge?
Oh, is that? And is that where this is?
Well, that, and I really think it's already become very recognizable. Yeah. I don't want to say that like iconic, but you know, it's up there. I mean, it was on. You know, it's made lists of the best novels from the last 100 years, and it's a big deal. So it makes sense to me, especially since Moffat seems to like to do this with his Christmas specials, where he's basing them on these important stories. It makes sense. I mean, it makes sense that he would pick it. I don't really know much about that. I saw the trailer. You know, it looks like I said, it looks Christmassy. It looks like there's action and stuff. I think the plot synopsis says that it's going to be set during World War II,
which is kind of odd because there have been a bajillion Doctor Who episodes set during World War II.
The original Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe takes place during World War II as well, I believe.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's just that with so many of these episodes taking place during World War II, how likely of it would it be for the Doctors to cross paths? Would it be for him to cross paths with himself? Because he's probably visited the World War II London about 100 times now.
You think that's got to be an England thing, right? Obviously World War II is big, like, all over the place, but, like,
wait,
England seems especially, yeah. Well, World War II, really? All over the world? But England definitely seems to be especially fixated with it in their media, I guess.
It'll be interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, people have pointed out, it's very interesting, all the places they can go, and we're going back to World War II again. But we'll see. I mean, I don't you know, I don't have anything against it. Of course, I don't really care as much for the setting and the locale as I do for the story. So if the story is good and everything else comes together, then I'm fine with that.
Okay.
But we'll see. I mean, you guys saw the trailer, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
so, you know, it looks fun. It looks lion witchy and wardrobe-y like.
And that's really all you really want to ask for from a Doctor Who Christmas special.
Right? Yeah.
Just a fun,
true.
A fun story.
And apparently, one of the characters, one of the actors, rather, that's going to star in it, this is a nice little bit of trivia, is the same guy who provided the voice for Mr. Smith, the alien computer in the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Oh,
so, really?
Yeah. Yeah, he plays a... I think he's going to be playing somebody called Reg Arwell. So that should be cool. I've never seen him in anything. So
yeah, Doctor Who definitely really likes to reuse its actors.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So that does that air on BBC America on Christmas Day?
9 p.m. Eastern, I think.
All right.
Okay, that's what I'm doing on Christmas.
Yeah.
But
I mean, well, we're doing a podcast about it. I mean, I guess that probably goes without saying.
But yeah, it should be fun. It should be a good time.
All right.
And then what I'm interested in seeing, don't they? I could be wrong about this, but in the past, have they used the Christmas specials to show the first trailer for the new season coming up?
Yes, they do.
That's not going to happen this year because they're not. I don't even think they're starting production until early next year. Well, so that kind of sucks. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Because we're doing that whole autumn 2012.
You know,
thing.
I wonder if they're going to try something else though. I wonder if they'll. Do some type of announcement during the Christmas special, just to keep
us.
They,
maybe.
I mean, I think they kind of have to just to keep us, you know. Interested.
Well, they don't. I mean, they know it's coming,
yeah.
So they really. If they're just like, you know, Doctor Who returns in September, you know, and then it's just like, well,
nine months
of no.
Will
Who.
Return in blank, you know, whatever story, like the Doctor will return in Let's Kill Hitler kind of thing.
Yeah, or they might. They might just show the trailer for the Doctor Who movie. segue. And so there is supposedly a Doctor Who movie being put together.
It sounds like it's in the very early stages.
Yes. So it's Harry Potter director David Yates is going to start working and developing it with Jane Tranter, who's kind of BBC's LA-based VP of programming stuff. They're the ones that handle how things kind of make it to the U.S. and BBC America and so on. So the quote is, this is coming from our good friends at blogterwho.blogspot.com. It says, this is from David Yates. He says, "We're looking at writers right now. We're going to spend 2 to 3 years to get it right. It needs quite a radical transformation to take it into the bigger arena. The notion of the time-traveling Time Lord is such a strong one because you can express story and drama in any dimension or time." I guess it's worth noting that like other comments associated with this have been that it's going to be non-canon. It's going to be completely new take on the on Doctor Who.
Almost like the old Dalek movies from before.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, and then Stephen Moffat even came out and kind of clarified a little bit. I think you found that quote, Sean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, he went on his Twitter and he just kind of – he likes to tweet things now and then. But he basically came out and said that, you know – that he thinks Yates is just he's fantastic. He thinks he's just kind of speaking the, you know, talking the talk while he's doing his red carpet stuff or whatever. And then he went on to say that any Doctor Who movie would be made by the BBC team, star the current Doctor, and not be a Hollywood reboot, which is very great news. What worries me a little bit is that, you know, this wasn't just Yates talking on one red carpet. I mean, he's had like 2 months to follow it up, and everything he said since then has been very consistent. You know, they're looking for a writer, they're going to take their time, they're going to do justice, they don't, you know, they appreciate fan pressure, but it doesn't bother them, blah, 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 blah. So I just hope that – I hope Moffat's right. I think the outburst on the internet really wasn't just an isolated thing. I don't think anybody really wants to do anything sort of rebooting what we're all now invested in 6-7 years here, or in some people's cases, 30 years. So we'll see, but I hope that that's not some crazy effort by them or somebody else to just like Americanize it and do their own thing. because it would be very unfortunate, and it'd be unnecessary too. I mean,
also
for
be
better
very
or worse.
Odd. It would be very odd for them to Americanize it, since David Yates is involved, and he's English, isn't he?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Well,
but
yeah.
Like,
but I'm saying, if, but I'm
you
saying
Hollywoodize it. Hollywoodize it.
Right. But
like, you know. I mean, even if you go and look at like the Harry Potter movies and whatnot, those are very Hollywoodized, but they still keep a fairly British identity to them.
Yeah, I'm not saying they wouldn't have that. I just think that if you go in and then you start doing things different than what's on the television screen, then
on
you
the
run.
Deli.
Yeah.
Deli,
sorry.
Everybody's thinking it. But, you know, that's the problem. This exists. It's already a thing. You don't have to go and
it's
and
a thing
push
that's been running
something.
For nearly half a century.
Right, and there's no need to reboot it. There's no need to do something different on the big screen, but then have the television running, you know, in the same but a different direction than that. You know, I think it would do more harm than good, and I think it would be tough for people to try to figure out what was going on. Plus, there's so many questions. Because you would have to introduce so much in a fresh started movie reboot, and then you have to.
Sorry to cut you off. I'm.
Yeah, it's okay.
I totally agree with you. You have to keep it in, in mind with what the TV show is doing. But there's still, I think, ways to do a sort of reboot without bastardizing the canon of the TV show and actually having this fit into the TV show. And I'm going to harken back to the Transformers movie in 87? 85, yeah, where they kill off Optimus Prime, and that led into future seasons of the Transformers film. What they could really do is, let's say Matt Smith's character, his version of the Doctor, ends in a couple years from now, or 2 to 3 years. And so they're going to have this new Doctor that regenerates. But you could always kind of have it set up that this is the regeneration story of this Doctor who's, his mind could be completely blank, doesn't know what he is. I mean, that there's always those kind of situations when the Doctor does regenerate that he goes into a slight bit of amnesia for a few moments. I mean, David Tennant did that, and then you saw a little bit of that in Matt Smith. He was trying to figure out if he was male or female. And so I think there could be ways where they could still make it really interesting and do a reboot, but make it more of a 12th Doctor reboot as opposed to a series reboot, and it still be interesting.
Sort of like what the TV movie did.
Yeah, I guess.
But that's not a reboot.
No, it's not a reboot, and that's why I think it wouldn't be necessarily a reboot, but it would be a way for them to kind of introduce a Doctor in a movie setting and say, hey, you know, this guy is, and this is all me just kind of speaking in conjecture here, but it could be a way for the Doctor to be introduced to these American audiences or Western audiences that don't follow the story, and
farther
Western audiences like Vancouver, and have the complete Doctor Who story, or at least parts of it, told in this revealed in this film, and make it really interesting and make people want to go back to the TV series. And yet, those who sorry, was that a sneeze or was that a someone yelling at me? But make it so that you don't need to necessarily watch previous seasons. You obviously want to, but and in order to catch up, this could almost be like a little mini catch up. So,
you know what I would really love them to do, and I've talked about it on this podcast before. I think that one thing that might be perfect if they pull it off correctly is do a movie that takes place during the Time War.
Yeah.
You get a new story. You get the Hollywood loves fucking prequels.
Yeah.
Even this, I guess this would be an in-between quill or whatever. It's the Time War, so it's much more bombastic. It would introduce you to the Time Lords, because the Time Lords would still be around, so you could learn about Time Lord culture and Gallifrey and all this stuff through that way, and you'd be introduced to Christopher Eccleston's character, you know, as he was just not Christopher Eccleston's character, Paul McGann's character.
Yeah.
You could maybe do a different actor. I'm not sure how they would work that thing out. I think there are ways to do that. Something with that. I think that was, and that's the movie I really want to see, is something that takes place during the Time War. And it would be very loud and bombastic, obviously. And I think they could really do something very interesting with that.
Hmm. Right. And I would be fine with that. Mm-hmm. I just don't. I don't want something that starts fresh. I don't want something that ignores continuity. I don't want something that is completely unrelated to the TV show. I don't. I think it's silly. I think it's redundant. And I think that I think it would be a foolish project. I think you've got such a rich thing going on now, in terms of backstory, in terms of, you know, characters and everything that's been built in the last 5 or 6 years, never mind the last 40. And you can mine from that, and you should, and everything that they do should respect and involve the TV show. So to come out and say they're going to do the completely own thing and it's going to be completely separate and everything, I just think it's a terrible idea. I really do.
Yep. They need to make it more like the South Park movie, where it was still fitting with the canon, yet you could totally go and watch it and not.
That is the weirdest analogy ever, but it is perfect.
I would have loved to have them come out in the 50th anniversary and be like, yeah, so we're just going to do a 2-hour movie or a two and a half hour movie, just bang, like right there.
That could be great.
That'll be the 50th anniversary, sure.
And that would be great, but.
But that 50th anniversary is like this year, though, right?
Well, yeah, it's next year. It's 2013.
Next year, I suppose it's December still.
But. I'm not saying I think it's beyond impossible at this point. I just think that would have been cool if they had looked at that a year or two ago and tried to put all those pieces in place. But
well, they've probably been looking at making a Doctor Who movie for a lot longer than a year or two ago.
Well, there's been talk. Yeah, of course, there's been talk about it for a really long time. But that doesn't.
Just,
that's never.
Yeah,
really.
It's just. I'm sure that there have just been difficulties in getting it all off the ground and whatnot. Is what I'm saying.
Sure.
So, like,
sure.
This has probably been a thing for a while. But it's just now we're just now hearing about it in an official capacity, I think.
Right, and with a movie, you still have to really kind of be sensitive to the fact that you don't want what is, as far as I'm aware, the most popular, best show on your station in the UK, which has now more viewers than ever before. You don't want to do anything to jeopardize that, you know.
Right.
You don't want to start doing movie stuff that pulls away from the TV, because realistically, at the end of the day, that's where they're gonna want to continue their focus in terms of, you know, longevity and franchise, you know, ROI and all that other stuff. So it's complicated. It's really complicated. But I think it can be done. I think it'd be done very well. I think some of the ideas here we have are great.
Yep.
I think there's a lot more we haven't even begun to think about. I don't like the idea of Yates or anybody else in Hollywood or anywhere else being like, yep, we're going to do our own thing, so forget everything else you know. Go start fresh here. Maybe borrow some ideas. Maybe do some of our own stuff. It's going to be great. Just no, it's not. Just stop it.
You don't want to pull a torchwood on it, really, and ruin it for Western audiences or audiences back home. And speaking of Torchwood, John Barrowman recently came out and mentioned that Torchwood is on hiatus, and I'm having trouble finding the exact link, but it's kind of all over Twitter and a few of the other blogs. We'll dig it up for the show notes. After this past season, which I actually really enjoyed this season. I thought there were, you know, obviously we spoke about it a little bit. There were parts where it kind of got off tangent, but or got off track, I should say. For the most part, it was a decent Torchwood season, and not as good as Children of Europe. But
yeah, I totally disagree. I think that was garbage, but whatever.
Well, I liked it. Regardless, there we go. So,
yeah, we've been over that on previous.
We've been
episodes.
Over that. So John Barrowman came out and said, "Yeah, I really have no idea what is going on with the show. It's so far, it's on indefinite hiatus, which could mean a lot of things. Most people tend to believe it means that the show's probably." Done with, but
well, I'm sorry. Again,
no. I mean that's. I what are your guys' thoughts? I mean, do you think this is?
Well, never. No. Well,
I don't think this is absolutely the end of it.
No, I don't think so either. I think never say never with this stuff. I mean, he came out and he basically said, you know, that they've paused it. They don't know what's going to happen. He'll do it as long as they want him to do it. He loves doing it.
Pretty soon they're going to be.
But
I mean,
he's another one.
They're going to. Sorry, you go ahead. You go first. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, he's another one who also was like, we'd love to do a movie. Torchwood lends itself more to a movie than anything else, but who knows? We have to keep, you know, they are a bunch of different actors and writers have basically said, you know, we have to keep reinventing this show. That's what we do. So if we come up with a good idea and if stars align, all this other nonsense.
Stars align?
No. Oh. No. No.
Dolly, you're killing me today.
Nope.
I realize it's early things for me, but jeepers. But we'll see. I don't think it's the end.
Yeah, I think if they're going to do something with it, they're going to have to do it soon, though, because they're running into the Angel Buffy problem, which is that you have an immortal character on your show that is going to start looking, and even already has started, if you ask me, in Miracle Day, going to start looking much older than he should be as an eternally youthful character.
Could
like
be.
There is a sort of like a self-built-in timer on that show.
Mm-hmm. You know, this would be kind of a cool show for Netflix to pick up and do a short, you know, 6-episode series, because Netflix is now looking into doing that with some television programs where they're going to be funding it and have their own almost mini, you know, mini
Arrested Development.
Yeah, Arrested Development, exactly. This could be another great one for something like that. Or, you know, doing some films. Regardless, I still really want to see Torchwood make a return appearance to Doctor Who in some fashion or another, even if it's just a mention or bring the characters or bring some characters in and out of the show, whether it's a single plot, you know, single story or something. But it was pretty
50th
integral.
Anniversary.
Yeah, exactly. 50th anniversary. So whether
you think they're going to do something with Torchwood for 50th anniversary?
There could be a mention.
I think there's a decent chance they bring Jack in for something, even if it's a one-off cameo. I really do.
Yeah,
okay. I don't think you'll see all of Torchwood, but I think Captain Jack.
Yeah.
Given how vocal he is about it, I think there's a pretty decent chance he shows up.
Yep.
And cool. The fan base is there. I mean, people like him, you know.
Yeah, so. He's popular. His popularity grew.
I'd love to see him
in America as well, and maybe even more so in the BBC in the UK.
I would love to see him interact with Matt Smith too.
Yeah. Could be cool, kind of a cool dynamic. So, well, let's move on to the book club. We'll figure out a real name for it. But so we all kind of decided this week that we wanted to watch, or decided last week that for this week's episode, we wanted to watch the earliest Doctor Who that was available on Netflix, which was William Hartnell's The Aztecs. I guess it was the early 60s, was that when?
1964.
Yeah, 60-ish, yeah. Yep. So it's the Aztecs actually compiles 4 episodes of Doctor Who.
For those who don't know, we should probably point out that early Doctor Who didn't have seasons so much as it did. Like, it told stories like a season would be about 4 to 10 episodes or however many episodes, but then it would tell one, like, overriding story, and then they would wait for the next one.
Yep. And so William Hartnell was the first Doctor, and the Aztecs essentially it takes place in Mexico during the Aztec reign, or towards the end of the Aztec reign, I guess. I found this to be kind of a really interesting episode from the fact that this was my first journey into classic Doctor Who, and it's at a time when Doctor Who was an educational TV show, and that's why they would go through these kind of story arcs, these 3, 4, 5, 6 episode arcs. They tell one story and kind of go into details about the ancient history. And in this case, they talked about the Aztecs and some of their cultural quips, you know, some of the things that they did that could relate to or could be used for, you know, educational purposes. So I'll post the Wikipedia link in the show notes, but what are your thoughts about just this classic Doctor Who? We spoke a little bit before we started recording it. Sean, you had a couple interesting things to say that I kind of agree with, actually. Going back and watching these classic episodes.
Okay. Well, first of all, this is my second or third foray into the classic Doctor era. I was very curious. I went looking for a copy of the 5 Doctors, I think it was. Mm-hmm. I'm because with the 50th anniversary coming up, I was very curious how they used to do those. So I had watched those, but we'll talk about those another time. So this is my first, really first Doctor story, just solo with the black and white and the 1960 situation. And it's like I was telling you guys before we started recording, I'm a little bit of a different breed when it comes to going back and watching classic TV and classic movies. I don't really take to it as much as I do current stuff, and as much as some other people do. Some people really, really dig, you know, stuff as far back as 30s and 40s, obviously 60s and 70s. For me, I've never really – I have to really work to pay attention and to try to enjoy stuff from these eras. Just, I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I'm a child of the modern age and, sure. and good-looking TV with decent effects or anything. But anything before the 80s for me is a little bit of a challenge. So that being said, I went into this with as much of an open mind as I could because, you know, obvious Doctor Who fanboy here. And as people like to say, it's good to know where things come from and good to know the roots. And it's a very unique situation where we can go back and trace one character 40 or 50 years to its beginnings. So that being said, I thought the story itself was good. I really liked the notion of such an early episode in the show's history dealing with the potential fallout of changing history. So, and the Doctor kind of had to stand there and tell his friends or his companions that, like, you can't do this. Because basically, for those who aren't familiar, and when they wind up back here with the Aztecs, Barbara, I believe, the teacher, gets mistaken for an Aztec deity,
yeah.
And she wants to use that to leverage influence and stop human sacrifice, which was very big yeah. with these people. And then, of course, that would change everything. Blah, blah, blah. And the Doctor gets really, really mad about that because he recognizes even then that you can't do that. This is what it's like. You just have to go along with it until we get out of here. And it's interesting because even then there's these classic stories of being separated from the TARDIS and kind of having to fit in and work around what's going on until they can figure out how to get out of there. So I thought that was really cool. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the aspect of going back in Earth history. I thought it was neat. For the most part, I enjoyed the side characters and those plots as they played out. This is my first kind of experience with Barbara, Susan, and Ian, the three main companions. I'm not sure I'm a fan of all of them. But, I mean, again, this is just one isolated story. I just think for Barbara, who's supposedly this really smart teacher, I found her mildly annoying.
Yeah.
And her insistence on doing something that she has been told numerous times is a very, very bad idea. Susan, I don't know. Again, it might have just been this one plot, but I felt like she was very kind of like isolated and very just kind of pushed to the side. And it was funny because to me, she kept – it was almost like she was like a vessel for pushing rights and women's rights and all this stuff because when they tried to force a marriage on her and everything, I felt like every big moment for her in these four episodes or this series was she would just walk away from everybody she was talking to. She would just completely walk away and stare off into like up into space past where anybody could see and just like give this small soliloquy about, oh, that's not right and I have rights and that's barbaric and you're this and you're that. And I get it. I get what they're trying to say. I really do. I just thought it was kind of hysterical because yeah. It's like, who are you talking to? They're all behind you. Like, turn around.
Educational dog.
Well, okay, let's dive into who these characters are really. I mean, you mentioned Barbara being this school teacher that kind of the doctor kind of
right.
picked up, I
okay.
guess.
So, and, if you don't,
yeah,
do you want me to?
Yeah,
to,
sure, sure.
Yeah. Yes. So, again, for those who might not be aware, because I really wasn't. I only have a vague understanding. Basically, what happens in these early Doctor Who episodes is the Doctor's traveling with his granddaughter, who we all assume is his biological granddaughter, Susan. And the TARDIS gets stuck on Earth, so they're there for a couple months. And then Susan's going to school locally, and these two teachers, Barbara and Ian – notice that she's really smart with science and history. So one day they want to figure it out, so they follow her back to, I think, a junkyard where the TARDIS is, and they overhear her fighting with the Doctor. So they go inside. They become the first humans to ever step on the TARDIS. The Doctor yep. freaks out because he thinks that they're going to, you know, tell the world about him and everything, and so he panics and he sends the TARDIS flying off. And at this point in the series, he has no control over it. So once he starts the TARDIS, it just winds up places. So there's no way for them to get back to where they need to be. And that's how Doctor Who starts. It's now him and these companions of his that are traveling through space and time, going on adventures. And like Stephen said, it's really a way for the show to be very educational for viewers and kids and everything. So now flash forward. Yes, I'm learning.
Do-do-do.
But yes, so now you flash forward to this episode and we have them in the Aztec society. You've got Barbara, who's supposedly very versed on this. You've got Ian, who, from a behind-the-scenes standpoint, is used as kind of a character to do everything that the old Doctor can't do. He can't do action scenes. He can't do any of the fighting. He can't do any of the adventurous stuff. So Ian is kind of a vessel for that. And it's funny because as a character, I find him to just be like a Superman almost. Like, yeah. Did you guys notice this?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
he's a great fighter. He's brilliant. He gets out of danger. He gets out of traps. Like, he's this perfect all-around adventurous character.
He is very much a cipher for, like, British, like, old-world British-y, like, pinnacle of manhood kind of a
right.
British tar.
Right.
You know, like, that kind of
right.
thing. Like,
I mean,
I think
that is
very intentional.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's just funny to me because he knows so much and he's so versed in so many different things. He knocked a dude out by using, like, a Vulcan death pinch on him, which was fantastic. But yes, so these characters, I don't know if you guys have anything to add, but that's really the gist at this point.
Thumb.
Yeah, he's like, I will defeat you by using just my thumb. And he's like, what are you talking about? Oh, Vulcan death grip, I'm unconscious.
Yeah, well, he basically knocks out this highly
Aztec,
trained yeah. Aztec warrior, you know, the prime, the Aztec prime warrior with, you know, the use of his thumb.
Yeah, and it's a nice touch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nice little comical touch. And I could totally see something like that happening these days too.
I mean,
but,
yeah, this was in the era of Star Trek when, you
yes,
know, on TV when you wanted to take somebody out, you did a karate chop and then suddenly
yeah.
they were
they
in their
asleep.
Neck and
well,
suddenly they were on the ground.
Of course, when Captain Kirk
whether that was towards some kind of censorship, maybe, or if that was kind of just like, we don't know how anything works in real life, so we're just going to
Well, I mean, it was early television too, so I mean, it wasn't
yeah.
like, you know, and as this show definitely shows, you really have to appreciate the very low budget nature of television, but we'll get to that in a second. Overall, I think in terms of what we need to know for this episode, I think that sums up the characters. I mean, you've got
yeah.
Barbara and Ian,
yep.
her two teachers. You've got Susan, who is the very young, you know, granddaughter of the doctor, who is out learning on her own. And these guys are all supposedly guardians for her. So she's learning as she goes. But then she's also absorbing from her grandfather and the teachers. And then, of course, they all kind of get separated as Barbara gets recognized as a deity. But then
yep.
she's doubted as that. So then she has to prove herself. Meanwhile, the doctor's trying to scheme to get back to the TARDIS, which is locked in a temple. Meanwhile, Ian is recognized as a potential warrior to lead the Aztec army. So he has to do his thing and prove himself on the side. And then Susan was – she was learning, right? She was a student of the High Grand Wizard – High Grand Priest of Education – whatever he was called.
The High Grand Priest of Education. the Grand Dragon student.
I may have panicked on that.
No, she
the High Priest of Wisdom.
There you go. Well, she kind of represents the viewer, right? And the,
right,
the viewer is meant to
yeah.
be this almost – I don't want to say naive, but very at that time, very modern thinking, understanding modern ways. And so when these classical ways are – well, when these classical ways, like of the Aztecs, they had their own ways. When they're portrayed or they're kind of forced on her, she's like, no, wait, this isn't right. Not in the 1960s where I live. This doesn't fly.
Sure. Listen up, you backward sons of bitches. Let me tell you about British engineering and why it's so much better than yours.
Yeah.
Women's rights.
Yeah, women's rights. Which is a good thing, by the way. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
So we'll kind of talk about our thoughts right now on the episode. And I had a couple comments that I noted. William Hartnell's doctor, first of all, he's in his 60s, probably around that time. And Stephen, you mentioned that brought up issues why they ended up going to another doctor down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Later on due to William's health, but
they went to Troughton, I
yes.
think is how you pronounce the second doctor's
Patrick
last name.
Troughton. He kind of reminds me of David Tennant's doctor, almost like an older version of David Tennant's doctor. He's definitely wily. He's got
really
knows, well, and I'll tell you why. So not in the physical sense. He's not active.
Well, yeah.
He carries a cane, obviously, but he does a little. He knows how to trick people. He definitely uses trickery to get people to answer questions that he has. He has to get people to do things. And for instance, he uses Kameka, who's falls in love with him unbeknownst to him. He basically agreed to marry her with Cocoa Beans. She another aspect.
Sounds so great the way you put it.
Yeah, he used cocoa beans and marries her. It makes him
that would not work today.
Not work today. But it related again to the doctor kind of being a womanizer, even in his like 60-plus-year-old visage. These women in their 30s were all over him because of for whatever reason, and.
Because he's the doctor.
Because he's a doctor. But he still kind of has a little bit of a youthful energy, I kind of thought.
Actually, I agree with you, Dolly, and that in saying that he seems like David Tennant. And it might sound a little bit weird and maybe sure. almost a little bit vapid, but it's something the way he smiles when he talks. Like something in his smile just really reminds me of David Tennant, the way he is doing all these things and plotting all this stuff. But
yeah, his facial expressions really kind of, you're right, they mm-hmm. tend to remind me of him, yeah.
Yeah, they both carry themselves in much the same way, but again, he's much more of a, I don't know, reposed, sort of older and more wizened version of that.
With a nice sense of style, I gotta say. Those plaid pants were pretty kicking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Definitely unlike any grandfather that I've ever come across, that's for sure.
Yeah. I must have just watched this episode a completely different way. I didn't notice any of this.
Well you're supposed to have your eyes open, by the way.
That's fantastic. That's true. I did have to watch it twice. I did fall asleep on the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Full disclosure on that.
Sean
I got about
Snorton.
Halfway through. Stephen Storm.
At least mine sounds cool. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Shut up.
Salabar says continue.
But yes. No, go ahead. You're right. Everything you've said is pretty much. I didn't notice the smile thing, but that that's cool.
Stephen, you left a good note in the or there's a
Thanks,
note
Sean.
In here that we see you mentioned like seeing the seeds of what the doctor will become.
Yeah, very much. I think so anyway. Like you have the doctor sort of using his friends to do things that the doctor can't do. Like you put it a little bit ago, and that might have been probably more of just a practical thing because they probably couldn't have William Hartnell doing all the physical work and stuff like that. But at the time, or during the episode, he has his friends sort of like do all of the dirty work, almost like it gets to that point where he has to like hold down one of the companions has to hold down the sacrifice victim, and he's like, "No, you have to do that." And the doctor is just like, "Yeah, you have to do that." Like, I'm asking way too much of you. I'm asking you to be an accessory to murder, which to these people it isn't murder, I guess. But like to you, it's ostensibly like you drove the knife into him yourself, and. I just need you to do that for me. Is that okay? You can see that. I mean, like the doctor's weapons kind of thing. That the doctor turns people into weapons, kind of thing early on, like that. And just like I said, the way he carries himself as sort of he is clearly more intelligent than everyone else. Probably knows that he's more intelligent than everyone else, but doesn't let on that he's more intelligent than everybody else. Not all the time, like Kameko when he's talking to her, getting her information from her. He like you said earlier on before we were talking about the show, or before we started recording. He is kind of a womanizer-ish character, but he's like almost looks like he's completely unaware of. What he's actually doing, and whether or not he actually is unaware of just how devious he is kind of unclear because it's, you know, he never really says anything out loud, but you can kind of see that, like, his ulterior motives kind of formulating behind him.
I kind of like at one point when I think she's sitting next to him at the, or standing next to him in that garden, and he says, "Oh gosh, I really would love to see the inside of the temple, but you know, golly, there's just no way to get in. And if only I knew who the architect was. Oh well, I know who the architect is. I'll lead you right to him."
but then he's like, "Oh, I wouldn't want to bother you."
Yeah, he's definitely good at kind of using people to do his bidding. And right. I see you make a really great point about how. A lot of this, a lot of future, what the future doctors do, all kind of goes back to some of the limitations of William Hartnell's character. You know, physically he wasn't able to do a lot of the action sequences, so he had other people who were much more physically capable as his companions kind of do those things for him. The doctor metamorphosizing into another doctor down the line, obviously because of William Hartnell's age, they couldn't keep him around as a doctor forever. So there was a lot of interesting things that kind of came out in the series because of some of this initial limitations.
Right. Sure. And limitations, I think there's like an old saying, and I'm probably butchering this, is like limitation breeds ingenuity or something And you can definitely, like, if you can say anything about the original Doctor Who, it was definitely limited.
Set pieces. Sean, you made a point that some of the environments and set pieces were just, there's three of them and they use them over and over again.
Well, that's fine. That's what I would warn anybody who hasn't seen this yet, and I'm sure there's people who have who would agree that you really need to accept the really, really limited resources that these people were working with. And it shows. I mean, of course it shows. I think as long as you go in with an open mind and you appreciate it for what it is, then I think you'll be fine. I personally think the story is strong enough to really kind of carry the rest of it. But you really have to look at it as a production that is – I don't think finding its footing is the right term, but it's trapped within the confines of
sure.
like the era that it was built in, you know? I mean, you've got fight scenes that last 5 minutes, but 4.5 minutes of them are just people grabbing each other and hip tossing them down.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like just spinning around one another and over and over and over again. Or
this show was made in the 60s before they had all of that interesting technology and all these techniques and stuff.
Of course.
On a low budget station, and it was like their lowest budget show. you have to take every one of these things into account. And if you can't get past that, this probably isn't for you.
Well,
the
limitations definitely helped breed some innovation, because some of the camera angles that they actually used, they really focused on facial features a lot, or like facial expressions a lot in this, and that those helped tell the story even when the acting kind of didn't, because you would see. You know, they would pan and zoom in on the doctor's face, for instance, and he would. I think towards the end, where Kamika says something to the extent of, you know, I'll always remember you. I hope you remember me, or something to that point. I'll do your bidding this one last time. I think she was going to go do some final feat for the doctor, and you kind of see the camera zoom in on his face, and there's almost a little bit of pain in his face, like. Oh crap! I think I may have screwed somebody over just now, without knowing it. This entire time, he shows a little, you know, he shows that expression. And so, again, those limitations, because they didn't have these big sets and the money to create the environments that they could have. They focus more on the characters and the character development, which I thought was actually really refreshing. You know,
right? And that's the point too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's. Obviously, this show really wasn't about crazy – not so much about crazy adventuring or crazy fight scenes or whatever. Yeah. It really is about the stories and these introducing these characters. And it's really – it's fun. Ultimately, it's fun to contrast that to what we've – all of us have really fallen in love with current stuff. To contrast the running and the huge set pieces and the spectacle and the universe spanning adventure and all the crazy stuff that we have now and we love versus these really self-contained, really small three set pieces stories where it really is dialogue heavy, and it's really it pushes that forward by all these characters interacting with one another and just it's a birth of one of the most iconic franchises on television. And we have the ability to go back and to watch that. So yes, the fight scenes are silly, and yes, the set pieces are rough, and you know, yes, some of the second tier actors flub their lines.
Even some of the first tier actors, I mean the doctor kind of flubs his lines a couple times. And it is actually funny. It is funny to watch. You can almost make a drinking game out of it.
But I wouldn't be opposed to seeing more stories from this era.
Yes.
And I think that's, at least for me, again, as somebody who has a hard time going back to there, I think that says a lot. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's probably influenced by my love of the character and the show. But it's also, like I said, I think I told you guys, if you look on Netflix Instant, this is rated, I think, 3 stars, a little bit higher than 3 stars. So I think that's pretty close to what I would rate it to.
Yep.
I would give it a solid 3. Again, with the story and it's just you can't not view it through nostalgic glasses, you know? Like you can't. So based on all of that, I think it's fine. And I would be very curious to see some of the other stories from this era, and I'm actually excited to see where they go when they do regenerate into 2 and 3 and everything else that we will eventually wind up checking out. But yeah. I would recommend this. I have no problem recommending this to new Foo fans and obviously old. I would actually love to have a conversation with somebody who is really, really well versed with this and who I don't think it's realistic to talk to too many people who were around when this was originally aired, but maybe people who grew up with this, who went back and found it, who are really, really versed in the lore. I'd love to get their take on it too, because obviously we're coming in as pretty well versed in what we know now and Modern Who and yes, a little bit before Modern Who, but I will never make a claim that I know anything beyond information, you know, when it comes to this earlier stuff. And I think you and Steve will agree with me on that. Mm-hmm. You know, we know the names, we know, you know, the kind of history in a general sense, but to go back and to watch this stuff is really eye opening. I mean, it's just so different, and it's fun. It's fun to do it, and to, I think Steven made some really great points about kind of where the Doctor began and hints that, you know, Tennant or Smith or anybody else picked up from growing up with this stuff, you know, and use this Doctor and other Doctors to kind of influence their performances. And it's cool because, like you said, and this just that's the last plot thing I'll touch on. I wanted to talk about it before. It just hit me now. But like you said, he kind of realized, or may or may not have realized, that when he was working with that woman, that he may have done something, you know, mm-hmm. to that. Like he might have felt bad about that.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to think, even though he's probably, I don't know, 700 years old now or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like 600 by Tom Baker, so I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, so it is hundreds of years old. This is still a very young Doctor, ironically enough, compared to the Doctor we know now, who has seen so much more in the 400 years or whatever it's been since these stories. You know what I'm saying? So that's actually, to me, that's really interesting with characters I like, because even though you've got old man Doctor here, still really young at heart Doctor compared to everything that he's going to see between now and when we know him. And I think that's awesome too.
I totally agree.
With the knowledge of what we know is his future coming, to see it's a really
cool history lesson. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah. And to see these stories and know how the stuff that happens then may or may not indirectly influence characters that we know now. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, so. I'd actually like to find out more information about the Doctor's granddaughter, and I might do some reading on some of that stuff to find out how that...
That is a rabbit hole that you will never climb back out of, Kelly.
Well, we also have the Doctor's clone as well, his daughter, that we never hear from again.
Oh, Jenny, yeah.
Poor Jenny.
Well, never say never.
You know, here we'll close on this episode with one final thought. Matt Smith wasn't born when this episode first aired, and he is the current Doctor.
Shit.
And lose your mind. But it speaks volumes to how far back the Doctor goes and how popular the Doctor has been over these last almost 50 years, 48 years now. And how it still remains as popular as, if not more, definitely more popular than it was back in the day. So,
if you think about it, I'm not sure anybody. Again, I know they probably went back and either grew up or saw these on reruns or whatever. But I don't know how old Stephen Moffat is. But
yeah,
I've got to assume Matt Smith, Karen Gillan, Arthur Darvill, even Alex, you know, Alex Kingston, all of these people that are absolutely dominating Doctor Who right now. None of them.
Yep.
Were around for this or for 2 or probably even for 3. Mm-hmm. I think probably a lot of them probably started watching with Baker. Or in terms of Amy Pond, I'm pretty sure she's around our age.
Yeah,
so,
yep.
You know, she grew up and probably had – if she watched, she would have had to done it – you know, she would have had to look forward or catch repeats too, because there was no Who when she was growing up. Yep. There was no Who. So –
Amazing. It's just
fast. Gone for a while. Yeah, that's weird to think of.
Yeah, you're looking at probably a 20-year gap from the 80s to the 2005 reboot. So that's just fascinating. It's funny. It's funny.
You don't want to count that awesome movie that took place in 95?
I kind of like that movie.
We'll take a look at that one in a future episode for sure.
God, yeah. We could dedicate a whole show to that.
We probably should. We probably should.
We'll take a look forward to it in 2012.
We'll take a look at that, and we'll take a look at some of the cartoons that actually came out from David Tennant's time frame, like Dreamland, and some of the really wild...
Scream of the Shalko is one of those, by the way.
Oh, is it really? Okay.
Sort of.
All right, guys. Well, that is going to be it for this episode.
Should we maybe tell listeners what story we're going to do next week so that they can catch up with us?
Yeah, well, we mentioned we're going to look at... So the way we're doing this is we're looking at the Netflix available episodes of Doctor Who, Class of Doctor Who. And I think we're going to go look at that Patrick Troughton one as the next step.
Mind dropper?
Yeah. Yep.
So
we'll watch that one. Please watch along with us. Watch it ahead of time, and that way you'll be able to join in and listen to the podcast and kind of understand what we're talking about. Go back and watch this episode, by the way, the Aztecs, because it really is a good episode.
That's a great history lesson.
Yeah, and you know what? We didn't have any trivia this week because we didn't have anybody. We're just kind of rebooting. We're not rebooting. We've regenerated into the next season of Doctor Who.
Get it right, Dally.
Podcast here. So leave a comment on this post telling us some of your favorite scenes from – or some of your favorite moments from this episode, the Aztecs. And we'll choose
– so many to choose from.
They're amazing. or tell us something – write in the word blue and you're automatically – no.
We'll talk to that too. Yeah. I mean, I think we can do some stuff moving forward with obviously our site, and then maybe we can expand out a little bit of social networking and stuff too. But we'll moving forward, guys, we've got some ideas on how to expand our fledgling awesome community.
Yep.
So
we have a lot of great feedback. A lot of people have been listening to the podcast. Makes us super proud, and so. Thank you, guys.
So yeah, the trivia will be really cool next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Promises me.
Yes, we're gonna have two people that you guys will be playing for, and I'm gonna try a couple little different things in trivia just to make it a little bit more interesting. And it will work. It's not gonna be broken trivia like we've had in the past, but it should be pretty good. It should be pretty fun. So, and we'll have a really nice prize for the winner. So, and that is it, guys. Where can we find you guys? Sean, where can we find you?
Predominantly on Twitter. You can find me at Sean Noren. I respond to that pretty frequently. So, yeah, Twitter it is.
And then Steven Storm.
Steven Strum. I am also on Twitter. I am at Steven Strum, as you would imagine. That's a Strum with a O, by the way. Like, I've been also getting, on top of the Storm thing, I've been getting a lot of people thinking that it's Strum. It is Strom.
But it's pronounced Strum?
But it is pronounced Strum, yeah.
Oh, interesting. See, I did not know that, and I've known you for about a year as well, so.
Yeah, Norwegian, dog. And you can also find me on sidequesting.com, which is the website that this is hosted out of. So if you're listening to this through iTunes, please go check out that website. We get a lot of other really cool podcasts. TV Questing is really awesome.
Yeah, the podcast you guys just put together with the Blade Runner, and Justin, was really good.
Suspended License. This is Suspended Pod on Twitter. Suspended License, really cool show. We're going to be doing another episode really soon here. So
yeah, look out, Leo Laporte, because SideQuesting has a bunch of shows that we're putting together. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm Dally Dabrowski. I'm not Salad Bar, by the way. I'm Dally. You can find me at Coolrats, KWLRATS.
Thanks for clearing that up for me.
Yeah, just in case people didn't know.
I thought you were a vegetable this whole time.
And that is it, everyone. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, gentlemen, for being my co-hosts, my wonderful co-hosts. I'm going to be sending you all virtual high fives.
This podcast was originally designed to be run by three people.
Yes.
To be piloted by three people.
Pilot. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I think we've made a record podcast, and that to this point, only two tangents were had by Stephen Strum. So,
I'm getting better.
You're getting better. We're able to do it at our requested time of 1 hour, so it's good. All right, guys. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on The Lonely TARDIS.
Take care.